they spent like drunken sailors, and now they're trying to figure out what to do about the problems they created. Well, we are here, and we have to make some tough decisions.
Congress figures out what's next for budget cutting. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 23rd. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, Bristol Bay Native Corporation shareholders voice their overwhelming opposition to the Pebble Mine.
Overall, folks are really looking to more the renewable resource development, wind or tidal-generated development.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates four decades of dependable financing and competitive interest rates for Alaskans. Find out more by asking your lender or real estate professional how Alaska Housing can assist you with buying a home. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
If the Congressional Supercommittee in Washington had reached agreement over how to tackle the federal debt, this week would have been one of the announcements and negotiations. But Capitol Hill is quiet, with Congress gone for Thanksgiving recess, and politicos are ramping up for partisan fights in December. APRN's Libby Casey reports that Alaska's senators are preparing for what's next.
For the past few weeks, all eyes in Washington have been on the Deficit Reduction Committee and its six Democrats and six Republicans. They had until today to come up with a plan to cut $1.2 trillion from the deficit, but their announcement Monday that they'd failed to reach a deal left Alaska's congressional delegation disappointed and weighing what to do now. The supercommittee's failure is supposed to trigger what's called sequestration. That means painful, automatic cuts of $1 trillion to the military and domestic spending priorities like education. Some areas are exempt from the sweeping cuts, including Social Security, Medicaid, veterans benefits, and programs that aid low-income Americans. The cuts don't kick in until January of 2013, giving Congress plenty of time to figure out how to avoid them. Some are calling for backpedaling on the cuts already. Republican Senators John McCain of Arizona and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina want to exempt the military from its $500 billion belt tightening. But their GOP colleague, Alaskan Senator Lisa Murkowski, says while she doesn't want to see defense suffer, it's not time to change the game plan.
I think that is ill-advised. That's an enforcement mechanism that we put in place to keep pushing us, to have a stick over our heads that we cannot fail to do our job here.
Murkowski says the threat of cuts will keep Congress working on solutions. Democratic Senator Mark Begich agrees that Washington needs motivation.
So I would be very hesitant to take anything off the table because this is the tough part. You know, these guys who are now talking about these items have been around here for decades. They spent like drunken sailors and now they're trying to figure out what to do about the problems they created. Well, we are here. And we have to make some tough decisions that are not going to be comfortable. But at the end of the day, it is the right thing to do for our country to keep it moving forward.
Defense Secretary Leon Panetta warned Congress recently that making the cuts to the military would lead to hollowed-out forces incapable of fending off attack. But Senator Begich says he doesn't think the situation is that dire.
He's doing what he needs to do. You know, he's a former congressman. He's going to sing the loudest song out there that gets people very nervous. But, you know, let's put this all in perspective. Let's just say, for discussion's sake, it's $800 billion for the Defense Department, okay? That's over 10 years. On a budget over that same period of time, they will spend well over $8 to $9 trillion.
Begich is urging Congress to use the coming months to work on compromises, but he says defense can find ways to save money. He points to the MEADS, or Medium Extended Air Defense System, a missile program that critics say is redundant to Patriot missiles.
We're not going to make those cuts on the backs of our soldiers, our men and women serving on the front lines, or the benefits they receive to do the service of this country. But I can show you within the Defense Department, like the $800 million for the MEADS program, a total waste of money that is unnecessary, or the payroll system that they totally messed up, $500 million. I can point to multiple things that don't affect our readiness or ability to fight the front lines and take on Al-Qaeda wherever they are, that we can deal with in the Defense Department.
Senator Murkowski says she has no interest in hollowing out the military, but she wants to see Congress tackle, in earnest, the best places to make cuts. And Murkowski admits the solution will include raising revenue, or taxes, something Republicans are loath to do. Murkowski wants to look to other bipartisan groups that have come out with deficit reduction proposals in recent months. They've reached compromises, even as Congress has gotten stymied.
A legitimate question is, okay, what happens now? I'm one of those who believes that we would be wise to look to what the President's Debt Commission came out with, the Simpson-Bowles report. The Gang of Six had really cobbled together from that, I think, the contours of a good proposal.
Senator Murkowski emphasizes that even though the supercommittee threw up its hands in defeat, Congress cannot. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
A survey by the Bristol Bay Native Corporation says that shareholder opposition to the proposed pebble mine is growing. The survey also collected information about what kind of development that shareholders do want. KDLG's Daisha Eaton has more.
According to the survey, 81% of shareholders now oppose the Pebble Mine project. That's a 12 percentage point increase since last time the corporation did a similar survey in 2007. Andrea Egli is the shareholder corporate relations manager for the BBNC. She says the findings are striking.
Current results show that more than 4 out of 5 of our shareholders oppose the project. But we also learned that 77% of our shareholders agree with BBNC's decision to come out against the project. So that tells us that we are in line with our shareholder values about project development within the region.
In 2009, the BBNC officially came out in opposition to the proposed Pebble Mine. The survey released Tuesday was conducted by Dittman Research and Communications. The firm surveyed 2,286 BBNC shareholders by mail and online between September and October of 2011. Besides showing growing opposition to the Pebble project, the survey also shows the majority of shareholders support development of other resources within the Bristol Bay region, especially renewable ones.
You know, overall, folks are really looking to more the renewable resource development, things such as wind-generated or tidal-generated development. Certainly tourism has always been an area that our shareholders have been interested in and support. But also, BBNC, you know, for the last 40 years, has supported responsible development by way of the sale of rock, sand, and gravel.
88% of shareholders said they would support development of tidal or wind power, while 86% wanted more tourism and wildlife viewing. 80% indicated they'd like to see increased sale of sand and gravel, and 78% say they want more done to promote sport fishing and hunting. 57% said they would support onshore gas and oil development. The shareholder survey comes on the heels of a separate statewide telephone poll of about 800 Alaska voters by the BBNC. That survey said more than 50% of those polled had an unfavorable opinion of the proposed Pebble Mine, compared to only 32% favorable. The BBNC is one of 13 regional corporations formed under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, serving around 9,000 Eskimo, Aleut, and Athabascan shareholders with ancestral ties to the Bristol Bay region. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
The state is releasing a high-tech survey for an area of the western interior that's produced abundant gold. An airborne geophysical survey covered 850 square miles in the Iditarod and Innoko region near McGrath. The state says the area has produced 2.3 million ounces of gold. Most of that has been placer gold, with little coming from hard rock lode sources. State geologist Dave Zumagala says the survey has identified potential in new areas that could be the source of the placer gold.
It shows possibilities for other gold-related properties that might be related to the granites out in that area. So it's a pretty exciting survey. It's opened up a lot of ground to further exploration by mining companies, and we hope that's going to spur work in the future.
Zumagala says past studies have indicated that the Iditarod and Innoko lode gold is in granite and rock in area mountains. He says known deposits at Donlin Creek and Chicken Mountain near Flat have confirmed this, but the survey has identified new targets.
Some of the hills that weren't known in the past to have granite really seem to indicate that there's some kind of granite maybe just below the surface or just by either covered by vegetation, or it might just be slightly below a rock cap. So something that seems relatively explorable by people.
Zumagala says the state-contracted survey employed helicopter-borne electromagnetic and magnetic scanning that identifies rock types. He says the information has to be followed up with on-the-ground mapping and drilling. Some state land in the Iditarod and Innoko area is already staked, but Zumagala says there's room for new claims. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Food Bank of Alaska gives out a record number of Thanksgiving meals.
We regret that the need grows every year. We regret that more and more of our neighbors need help getting a festive meal on the table for Thanksgiving.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news for over 26 years from Alaska's business sector, government, and industries. Information and subscription online at akbizmag.com.
A panel that advises the Parnell administration on federal issues has come out against federal legislation that would convey lands to the Sea Alaska Corporation. A three-page letter was sent to the bill's sponsor, Senator Lisa Murkowski, earlier this month, but just what impact the letter might have remains to be seen. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The group that wrote the letter is called the Citizens Advisory Commission on Federal Areas. It's part of the state's Department of Natural Resources. It has a dozen members, and they're appointed by the governor and both chambers of the state legislature. In a three-page letter to Senator Lisa Murkowski, the group expresses a number of concerns about companion bills, one in the U.S. House sponsored by Don Young and one in the U.S. Senate sponsored by Murkowski, that would convey thousands of acres to Sea Alaska. The Regional Native Corporation is entitled to land selections under the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. But the bills in Congress now offer up lands that are outside the original boundaries set in the 1971 legislation. The measures have brought about adamant support and opposition and have prompted heated debate across Southeast Alaska. The letter from the Citizens Commission is dated November 4th, and it says the group was frustrated by the lack of information it found on the bill. It says there wasn't enough publicly available data to assess conflicting claims about whether Sea Alaska could get enough timber from within the original ANCSA boundaries. The commission also strongly opposes the conservation areas established by the bill, which would put more than 150,000 acres into permanent conservation. State Representative Wes Keller of Wasilla chairs the commission that wrote the letter.
The federal government is not supposed to further restrict the use of our lands, and the acreage that's in the wilderness designation already in the Tongass with this, it would go up over 40%.
The commission argues that adding additional acreage would further impact the timber industry. A prominent Southeast environmental group also has problems with the conservation areas in the bill, but for very different reasons.
They don't go far enough.
Lindsay Ketchell is executive director of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, or SEAC.
Already been a fair amount of wilderness designation that has occurred in Alaska. And a lot of that wilderness in Southeast, I think in the letter it mentions 40%, is really rock and ice. And for us, we really believe that if you want to have vital fishing industry, you want to have wild salmon runs, you want to have vibrant deer to be able to hunt and fish, you have to have habitat protection balanced with economic development.
Beyond that disagreement, Ketchell says SEAC agrees with most of the letter, especially concerns about access to the land. Sea Alaska Executive Vice President Rick Harris responded to the Citizens Commission in a written statement saying, quote, "It is alarming and unbecoming of a professional organization to make assumptions without looking at the facts and conferring with Sea Alaska." He says Sea Alaska could indeed select land from within the original ANCSA boundaries, but that those existing areas include sensitive locations such as Craig's Municipal Watershed and high subsistence areas. He says, quote, Sea Alaska can only surmise that the commission supports logging in the Craig Municipal Watershed or high fisheries habitat such as the Setuck River, Eek Inlet, and Yakutat Forelands, unquote. He also claims that the commission reached erroneous conclusions regarding the bill's impact on endangered species and the commercial guiding industry.
This is not against Sea Alaska. In other words, for sure it isn't.
Again, Wes Keller, chairman of the commission. He says the group supports the conveyance of land to Sea Alaska, but it believes it can be done without this particular legislation. And he noted that he has two friends on the Sea Alaska Board of Directors.
I'm not kicking them in the shins or anybody else. They're friends. They really are. So we want what's fair. And it's getting this land and getting it resolved for Sea Alaska, it's long overdue.
The letter from the Citizens Commission represents a new voice in the chorus of opinions about the Sea Alaska bill.
But all of the things they bring up are part of the negotiations that the bill is currently undergoing.
Robert Dillon is a spokesman for Murkowski. He says the letter has some valid points, including concerns that the Sea Alaska selections would decrease effectiveness of the conservation strategy in the Tongass, and therefore require two additional species to be listed under the Endangered Species Act, or ESA.
We're just as concerned about, bringing up, exposing Southeast to ESA lawsuits from outside environmental groups for the wolf and other animals as well. And we believe that, some of the issues we've been working on with the Forest Service and others will address that issue.
As for the bill itself, he says negotiations are continuing at the staff level and that the text is always changing. Dillon says land bills often get grouped together and passed as a package, but it's too early to tell what will happen to the Sea Alaska measure. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
A pair of powerful Southeast lawmakers will face off in the 2012 election. Angoon's Albert Kukesh and Sitka's Bert Stedman will both run to represent a Senate district newly configured by redistricting. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Earlier this year, Kukesh predicted reapportionment would merge part of his Senate district into another one in Southeast. The Angoon Democrat told a public forum in Juneau that the change would leave him little choice about his political future.
For me, if that's what happens, it's time for me to ride off into the sunset and say goodbye to everybody.
Reapportionment is taking away most of the 130 communities in his current Senate district, which stretches from Southeast through Prince William Sound and up into the interior. What's left is combined with about three-quarters of Sitka Republican Stedman's existing district, but Kukesh has decided to run in 2012.
You know what? I'm not going to roll over and just go away. I've been in the legislature for 16 years, eight in the House and eight in the Senate, and I think that I've developed a wealth of information, a good background. I don't want to quit being in the legislature. I enjoy it. It's something I really have fun with, so I thought I'd give it a shot.
In addition to Angoon and Sitka, the new district includes Ketchikan, Wrangell, Saxman, Metlakatla, Haines, Hoona, and Prince of Wales Island. Stedman, who served in the Senate since 2003, faces a smaller challenge.
So there's about 26% of people that will be new, and I'll be spending a considerable amount of time going out and meeting with them and getting detailed understandings of their issues and try to resolve some of their stuff.
Stedman and Kukesh have worked together as members of the Senate's bipartisan majority organization. Stedman co-chairs the chamber's Budget Writing Finance Committee. Kukesh heads up its transportation panel. Both say they plan a clean campaign.
I want to just concentrate on the merits of myself, and I don't intend to be negative at all. I have nothing negative to say about him. He's a good guy.
Well, it always seems in politics in the end gets a little messy with whoever happens to be behind walking into the election the last few weeks, but I'm hoping that this election will stay at the high roads the whole way through. And I fully intend to talk about, the merits of my tenure in the Senate and not concentrate so much on my opponent.
Before facing each other, Stedman and Kukesh will have to clear their party primaries. So far, no one else has filed for what's now called Senate District Q. All but one of Southeast's other six lawmakers have filed for re-election. Redistricting, which still faces court challenges, is costing Southeast one House seat and half a Senate seat. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
Representatives from the Air Force Real Property Agency say efforts to clean up the former Galena base are well ahead of schedule. When the project began nearly 2 years ago, over 60 sites had been marked as areas of concern. Sample data on soil from those sites are now in the analysis stage. 18 other potential sites of concern had not even been investigated, but the Air Force is now close to having completed those investigations. Environmental Coordinator Al Weilbacher says the work done over the past 2 years usually takes much longer.
Normally our eyes on from start to finish is 3 to 5 years, and we've done this in about a year and a half, 2 years. So I'm very happy with our progress.
The Air Force next plans to perform a feasibility study to determine the best way to clean up the contamination.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. The Federal Aviation Administration sets standards for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, so when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA.
Two Fairbanks nonprofit groups are teaming up to start a youth homeless shelter. Fairbanks Youth Advocates, which has been spearheading the project, is handing it over to the more experienced Fairbanks Rescue Mission. The short-term shelter for homeless teens will be run out of a downtown building owned by Fairbanks Youth Advocates. Youth Advocates Director Mary Lee Bates told the Fairbanks City Council Monday that the arrangement will help her fledgling organization grow the new service.
It gives our agency and our nonprofit a chance to gain sound footing, be mentored, be part of the larger community that seeks to provide quality services. It gives us more time to grow and build capacity as an agency.
The two groups came before the council to urge the city to apply for a federal grant to renovate the shelter building, an empty triplex in need of major repairs. Rescue Mission Director Rodney Gaskin said the youth homeless shelter operations can be incorporated into his organization's budget.
It would be wrapped into our Alaska Housing Grant. And with this targeting this population, there's other grants that we can go forth to that would address this younger population.
The council unanimously approved a resolution authorizing application for the $750,000 Community Development Block Grant for the project. Some council members had earlier expressed concerns about the city having to pay back the grant if the shelter fails to operate for the required 5 years. Under the new arrangement, the rescue mission takes on that liability. Councilwoman Vivian Stiver said her concerns have been answered.
I'm excited to death about this project. I feel a lot better tonight, and seeing the partnership is just a wonderful. It's beautiful. It'll work, I think, wonderfully.
The city will hear back in March whether the homeless youth shelter renovation is funded. It has to compete against grant projects proposed by other communities around the state. Estimates put Fairbanks' homeless youth population at about 800 kids. The new shelter is designed to provide them short-term care and counseling with the aim of reuniting them with family. The Food Bank of Alaska and the faith community combined forces this week to distribute turkeys to all and all the trimmings to families in Anchorage and the Matsu Valley. It's the 8th year of the Thanksgiving Blessing Project, and like the previous 7, this distribution drew more families than the year before. KSKA's Len Anderson reports.
When Food Bank of Alaska Executive Director Susanna Morgan arrived at her office Tuesday morning, she found a message awaiting her.
Your Thanksgiving baskets, they've been a godsend. This year is the very first year that I went to Cross Point. They were so well organized and so joyful, every person, and I didn't have to stand outside for 1 minute.
For Morgan, the message was gratifying, if tinged with a bittersweet quality.
We
regret that the need grows every year. We regret that more and more of our neighbors need help getting a festive meal on the table for Thanksgiving. But we are delighted that the community rallies together to make sure that that happens, to make sure that, no one is in need on at least this one day in the year.
This year's Thanksgiving meal distribution was up 11% over last year. The overall distribution at the four Valley sites was just over 1,400 families, or 20% more than 2010. Morgan says because this was the second year for the Blessing Project in the Valley, she expected a big jump as word spread from last year. In Anchorage, the increase was 9% from seven distribution centers across the city, including nearly 200 home deliveries. That amounted to well over 6,700 meals, nearly 600 more than in 2010.
We worked out the poundage this year, and we figured out that it was more than 750,000 pounds of food that are distributed on Thanksgiving Blessing Day. You know, the small meals are intended for four, and they go up to larger meals at the size of eight. So we're talking between 25,000 and 30,000 individual meals.
The faith community not only collected food, but most of the distribution sites were at churches. Thousands of volunteers took part in both. Morgan says this was the first year for home deliveries. She says it's a service that will likely remain fairly small in future Blessings.
I want to make sure that everyone who can actually gets out of their house and comes down to a Blessing site, because the sites are wonderful. They feel like a community festival. Faith community works really hard to make sure that it is welcoming and a loving experience, and I don't want anyone to miss that.
Morgan says while the state of Alaska's Department of Health and Social Services does provide a grant of about $27,000 for the statewide purchase of turkeys, the bulk of the food, especially the fixings, comes from community sources. Farmers are asked for apples and potatoes. Churches and other organizations across South Central Alaska have food drives, all to make certain there's enough turkeys and fixings for every family that comes. And this year, that's all 7,322 of them, including Morgan's message lever.
This means everything to me. It means whether I have Thanksgiving or not, and I want to thank you for all you do. Bye.
In Anchorage, this is Len Anderson.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Ronco in Sitka, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Jeremy Scott in Galena, and Len Anderson in Anchorage. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Era Alaska. Reservations and Era Alaska travel information available online at flyera.com, 1-800-866-8394. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation celebrates four decades of adding stability and security to our economy by settling Alaska families into homes across the state. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.